Good evening, everybody, or for some it's morning. I know we have one of our beautiful Watersong Line council members who's here speaking here from Switzerland, and it's early in the morning, not quite morning star time for her. So good evening, good morning, good day to all of you. Welcome to the Watersong Line, second Watersong Line session of listening to our Mother Water, the path of purification. And tonight we are going to be exploring and flowing with the Mother Water goddesses and the path of purification. We have on our call Omile Yeye Oshun. We have Olu, her dear husband. We have Nicoleta Agricopoulos, excuse me. We have Sethi Sterling, we have Bob Boya, and we have myself, Anne Rosenkranz. All of us are members of the Watersong Line Council. And we have a number of beautiful participants. Once again, we want to encourage everybody to know that we are weaving a web of prayers for the Mother Waters all around the world with these calls, with these sessions, and with the Watersong Line offerings. And we're going to flow like that tonight. And we're going to keep growing our web of relations through the Facebook page, through our Water Song Line website, through the Center for Sacred Studies as well. And recordings will be available of all the calls for all those who have registered. So I wanted to offer it over to Omile Yeye Oshun to offer us a prayer to begin our evening.
Greetings, everyone. And good evening, good morning. I've got water in front of me with a fire and a sacred stone. And I would like to say thank you, Mother Waters. Thank you, Divine Mother, in all your names, for accepting us into your arms and opening up your wisdom to us. I give thanks to you, Mother, as Mama Oshun, Mama Yeminja, Mama Oya, Mama Olukun. I give thanks to you, Mama, as Mama Durga, as Mama Parvati, as Mama Sati, Mama Lakshmi, Ganga, Saraswati. I give thanks to you, Mama, as Mama Changing Woman. I give thanks to you, Mama, as Mama Guanyin and Tara. I give thanks to you, Mama, as Mama Aphrodite and Athena. I give thanks to you, Mama, as the source of everything, Mama Mut, Hathor, Sekhmet, Bas. I give thanks to you, Mama, in all these names, but all these names are illusions. Because, Mama, you know that when these names are taken away, you are just the one almighty, compassionate, loving, flowing river that brings us together as your children in this time of hardship. You remind us through your many faces that you are one and we are one. Thank you, Mama. Thank you to all the holy ones from all the lineages, from the east, the south, the west, and the north, from those up above who watch over us, and those below who support us. I give thanks to all those from all the lineages on both our mother and father's side. I give thanks to you. Thank you for opening up this wisdom, and thank you for bringing us all together. I'll just sprinkle this water around for blessings for everyone. Ashe, Mama, reminding us that water is the gift of life. In water is the consciousness that elevates us smoothly and quickly into the other realm. Ashe, Mama, Aho, Namaste, Amen. Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Ashe. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you. We wanted to begin this call by giving a brief bios of the ones who are part of the Watersong Line Council. For these 7 weeks, there'll be about 8 of us who are on the council weaving in and out. And we have 16 of us on the council. The number of people have not are not able to be on the call and on the calls, but I wanted to just briefly give you an idea of who is all part of the council. So Omile Yeye Oshun is initiate of Mama Oshun, also called the Crown of the Mother. She has many different titles, and Omile and I, in our process of growing the Waters Online website, we would laugh about our bios and how our bios, they change all the time, and we don't really like titles and different ways of claiming our identity through a bio. And but fundamentally, the way that Omile and I, if I could speak for you, Omega, the way we talk, the way we understand our offering in this world is that the different initiations that we might have, the different names we might have, the different ways that we might identify ourselves, all of those really are fundamentally just in indicating the responsibility that we've taken to offer ourselves in service to the Mother Waters, in service to the Mother Earth, that we are, in essence, devotees of the water and devotees of the earth, and all the different ways that we might be named or different ceremonies that we've been a part of and that we take care of are all in service to that. But Omile has many different beautiful things that she's been a part of and in service to. And you can one can go on the Waters Online website also and read about her. And one of the things she's done is she's a co-founder of the International Humanity for Water Awards. She's given awards to the Dalai Lama, to many different, all to the 13 Grandmothers Council, and to many different wonderful people who have done service all over the world. She also has Ayurvedic medicine training, and she's going right now as a counseling and master's program as a graduate student. So she's also an instructor at the Center for Sacred Studies Ministerial Program. Chief Rima Ogumbumimi Jose is her mother, and she's the founder of the Island Therapy, and she's also a chief of the Ifa tradition. Is that right, Omile?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Olu is also a chief of the Ifa tradition. Mahialani Uchiyama, she's a priestess of Ifa and the high priestess of Nana Buroke. She's a dancer and a musician, and she also has a lineage from Hawaii that she has. She dances and she practices. Umbali is a medicine woman. She's born in South Africa, and she's there now. She's a descendant of a Khoikhoi female healer and who are closely related to the Bushmen. And she's and the Greek people is confirmed by Credo Mutua. Robin Youngblood, she's an Okanagan Skalagi, minister of the Church of the Earth, and she's going to be joining us in a few weeks. She has a mixed blood heritage, and she is one of the remarkable people who has survived the mudslide, that happened in Washington. And she'll be talking about that and the healing that she's been launched to do previous to being in the mudslide. And now very much, very strongly because of the work that, because of the way the mother tumbled her in the mud. And Reverend Zenju Earthland Marcelian Manuel, she's a Zen priest and African and Native American indigenous healer. She has many different branches of her expression of her love and devotion. She's an author, a visual artist, a poet, and a drummer. She's also part of the council. Kazumi Okishi is a Kaminichu shaman from Okinawa, Japan. She's trained in Reiki reflexology. She's an aromatherapist, and she travels all around the world doing ceremonies as a shaman from Okinawa, all over the world praying for the waters. Masako is also a shaman from Japan who translates for Kazumi and travels with her. Liz Addison is an innovative composer and dancer and singer and a visionary artist, and also dances and prays and heals, offers healing for the earth. Imani is a master drummer, a student of Ola Tunji. She'll be joining us next week on the call, and she offers her songs and her music in service to the earth and to the waters. Ellen Whiteside is part of the Sacred Grove Retreat. She is also one who has offered much healing. Cynthia Sterling, who is on the call right now, grew up in a Quaker family, has a lineage from many different lines from the United States. She's a teacher of transcendental meditation, and she's a planter of the corn seed, the sacred corn, and she'll be talking about that with us in a few weeks. Lane Redman is no longer with us now. She was a member of the Water Song Line, and she's done has did incredible work with the drum and with the sacred songs, and she was the author who wrote When the Women Were Drummers. We honor her and send love to her, all of her ancestors and all her people. We also have on the call right now Nicoleta Agrilopos, who I'm sorry for the mispronunciation of her name, if I did. She's Swiss and Greek and offers ceremonies in Lake Constance in Switzerland and also in the Greek mountains. So that being said, it gives you an idea of the range, and then there's myself. I consider myself a devotee of the waters. I have Moravian and Jewish ancestry, German ancestry, and I've been a devotee of the waters and of the earth since I was a little girl. So I wanted to just offer that so that people have an idea of the range of who we are, even though the words really don't express it. Gives one an idea of the range of the different parts of the world that we touch and the different types of prayers that we call in order to be in service to the Holy Mother Waters, to the earth, and to all of her people. So Omile, I'd like to open it up now to you to give us some teachings about the Mother Water Goddesses and the journey that she makes when life is out of balance, and how she comes as a messenger to help the people.
I'm giggling because it's so big. It's like talking about the ocean.
Yes, it is.
So it's a big thing. First of all, I feel moved to honor our two wonderful divine masculine men who are present, because this part of the journey with the water feels for me very incomplete if the men are not present. When I started this, or when I was called on this journey about 7 years ago now, I began the journey on my own and with females. But now, as the journey's gone on, I can tell that the energy is incomplete without the masculine presence. And so I just want to honor Bob and Olu and also any other men who may be on the line, and also all our partners, because we are all one in this journey. And the Mother Waters is bringing the masculine and the feminine waters together, so they will talk about that later, a few weeks down the line, about the divine masculine and feminine. It's a very, very important conversation. The Mother Waters, well, maybe I'll just start off by making myself real small in front of her, because it is an honor to have the Mother Water present with us in her many faces and forms and masks, so that we can actually realize just one thing, and that's our oneness. And then the second thing that comes out of oneness is our compassion. And then out of the oneness and compassion comes the human being again, reborn like a second birth. So the mother is she who births us. And right now, because of where we're at in our humanity, we're needing a second birth, a rebirth of our humanness to put the right now we're being like a human, but like being full human beings, bringing the being back into existence so that we can honor the Mother Earth, waters, and all the four-legged and two-legged ones, honor everything. And this is what we've gone away from. So the Mother Water, she comes and rises up out of the ocean, out of the sweet waters, the river. She rises even up out of the dirty water that we have produced through how we are looking after the earth. And she rises up in all her glory, and she stands there before us with the mirror in her hand and a pot of clean water pouring forth onto the earth. And she does all of this to remember us back together again, to jolt our memory back to a time, a place, and a space when our consciousness was at its highest, highest point. And as she, in this age of water, the age of Aquarius, the age when Venus is actually at her strongest and the ancestors are most present, she actually challenges us to look in the mirror and to look at her symbols and re-remember the way forward, the way to ascension, the way to being who we are really meant to be. So this is the role of the Mother Water. She comes at, she is always here, but she comes strongly at different times and re-emerges back into humanity for all to see. So what are some of the things that Mother Water wants us to know? As I said, it's about our compassion. It's about our oneness. One of the things that's happening right now, and many of those in the council are experiencing this, many who are doing the sacred water works are experiencing this. What they're experiencing is the reemergence of the Mother Waters in many, many different forms. And many people are finding it hard to just label themselves with just one tradition. At the moment, the way the Mother Waters is opening up our consciousness, she's deliberately doing this in a way where we're beginning to see the connections between the different goddesses, between the different gods. We're beginning to see the similarities in the symbols. We're beginning to see the similarities in the songs and the dances and the ways of practice. And there's a reason for that, because all of these things are one. So when we understand that the Mother Water, just like a river, is one, then we understand our own oneness. So right now, each of the Mother Goddesses from each tradition is standing up. And she is standing up in different parts of the oceans and the continents. So we can pay attention to the lineage. Each one represents a different lineage that comes from the one source. And the best way to really explain that is if you've ever looked at the river from above. And if you look at a river from above and you look below, you will see many branches off from one main body of water. And if you were none the wiser, you would think, if you're on the earth, just standing earth and not above, you would think that each of those tributaries or each of those rivers are all separate. That's how we are right now. We all think we're separate. But when you look from above, that river, you will see all those rivers belong to one main river. What's even more beautiful is that that main river, with all the rivers branching off, you will see forms a tree. So if you do research on the internet and you just pull up rivers from an aerial view, you will see that you will see what I'm saying is true. You'll see that the river is a tree. And that's how we are. We are all branches of the same tree, one tree. And when we know that, and when we understand that, then we will stand up strong. And we will realize that there are principles, there are universal principles that exist in all our traditions. There are universal principles of compassion, love, and oneness that stand in all our traditions. All the things we have built up around the principles are the things that we have brought in to take us to those places and spaces of ultimate compassion. As time goes on, sometimes we get caught up in the rites. The rites are important. So I'm definitely not taking away the importance of the rites. But we must get back to the essence. And this is what the Mother Water does. She takes us back to the essence. Water, and I cannot explain it. I'm just a humble human being. But water has this way. And it has always been the role of water, the living essence of water, to help us re-remember who we are, to refresh our memories, refresh our bodies, to refresh our spirit, to refresh our humanity. And right now, that's what we're needing. It holds the consciousness of the whole of humanity. So if you imagine a mother who gives birth to a baby, or in the mother's womb, everything that the baby needs is right there in the womb to nourish the child, to bring forth this consciousness into the world. So on saying that, I just want us to look at a couple of the symbols of the Mother Waters and what they really mean for us today. And I'm just going to take a pause to see if, Anne, did you want to add anything at this moment? Or
no, I think it's good. I'd like you to continue on, and then we'll take a, at a certain point, we'll take a break and open it up to one of the presenters or and some of the folks who are listening.
Okay.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you.
So if we take some of the symbols, so the mother right now, she's like the pathway to transcendence. And that's a big statement. But, you know, the mother in all cultures is the first to teach the child because it's the woman who gives birth. So the woman, the human woman, mirrors the spiritual mother herself. So if we look at some of these symbols that are there to rebirth us, a major symbol of the mother, we'll look at water itself. Why do we say Mother Waters? Why don't we say Mother Earth? Mother Sky. Well, water, when we talk about water, we're not just talking about the physical water we touch. We're talking about the cosmic water. We're talking about cosmic consciousness. From the cosmic consciousness, all things exist. Right now, we all together are sitting in the womb of consciousness. Right now, all together, we are sitting within the fluidity of the universe. That's cosmic waters. And that cosmic waters was represented in the Egyptian tradition as Mother Nut bent over the entire world, sheltering it, and everything from the sun to the stars passing through her body, circulating back around and through her body. So when we talk about water, all the elements are in water, because in the mother's womb, the baby, as with the earth element, the air element, the water element, the fire element, is birthed into humanity. So within water is all the elements. People never think about that. Water is that which gives us life. So our water right now is a symbol that's guiding us how. So let's talk about that. Water today is dirty. Our waters today are polluted. So when we look at the water and we say we're praying to the water, we're trying to heal the water, the message I've had from my journey is that actually water is trying to heal us. The consciousness of the water and the water beings are trying to heal us. Because when we look at the dirty water, water is basically sending the message out to us, who dirtied that water? Who dirtied this water? And whoever dirtied that water, this water reflects what is inside of you. To have clean water, you have to have a certain elevation of spirit that accepts that everything in life is equal and everything in life is sacred. And if our waters are dirtied, then it means somehow we have moved away from that which is sacred. We have moved away from treating our Mother Earth and all things that are living as sacred. And so water mirrors back to us the state of our overall sense of humanity. And the cleaner the waters get, is the cleaner, or I should say, the closer we have got back to consciousness, back to sacredness. So this is what water does as a symbol. It awakens us. It's here to awaken us. Because we cannot survive more than a few days without water. So the mother symbols, one of them, water, if water disappears, we disappear with the water. That's why in all cultures, all traditional cultures, and every culture is a traditional culture, by the way, in all cultures, water, by most of the temples, there was always normally a sacred lake, a river, because that's how much water was respected. But also the ancients, our ancestors, knew that water contained in an innate consciousness. And I'll explain that. There's a story where Mother Oshun, the Yoruba goddess, she is sent down to earth with 16 other Irimale beings of light who were male. She was the only woman. They were sent to earth. Earth was called Aye back then in the Yoruba West African tradition. And they were sent to earth to look after her, to treat her as sacred, to caretake her. And over a period of time, they forgot the laws of balance. So the earth was beginning to go into extinction. As the earth was going into extinction and nothing was working anymore, they got all the experts around the world and said, what's wrong with our earth? How can we fix it? Nobody could fix it. So they went back to God and said, God, please help us. Please save us. We're going into extinction. And God said, well, where is the woman that I sent to earth with you? And they looked at each other and said, ah, her? She's down there still. And God looked at them and said, I can't help you. I gave all the wisdom of the world to the woman. You have to go and beg her for forgiveness. You have to go beg her for her help. The beings of light, the 16 beings of light, went back to earth. And they begged Oshun, they went to Oshun and she was plaiting hair. And they, as she's plaiting hair, they said, Mama, please help us save the world. And she said, she was pregnant. She said, if I give birth to a boy, I will save the world. I'll explain that symbol of giving birth to a boy, because at first I thought it was sexist, but it's not. The most important thing I want to explain right now is the symbol of her plaiting the hair. Let's think about it. If God said, I gave all the... This is a very ancient story. So behind these symbols is a high science of our own existence. So if God said, I gave all the wisdom of the world to the woman, and the woman at that time was Oshun, and Oshun is the mother waters, and she's plaiting hair. In the story, the hair represents DNA. So if she has the wisdom, and if she is forming the DNA, what does that tell us? That tells us that the wisdom from the DNA, in our DNA, the consciousness comes from the water. And this is what the ancients knew. And this is why they treated water sacred. And my theory from going to many sacred rivers and listening and sitting next to them is that the more our waters become polluted, is the more confused humanity becomes. Because the deep consciousness that holds our humanity, our sacred DNA, lies in the waters of our body and the rivers. So as the water in the rivers become polluted and the oceans, so too does the water in our bodies become polluted, so too does the consciousness of humanity disappear. We have to keep our waters clean. Another major symbol, and I'm going to pause, but is actually the lotus flower, the blue lotus flower. The blue lotus flower is a very, very important symbol which actually integrates cultures across time and continents. So let's say the blue lotus flower represents, which the blue lotus flower comes up out of the cosmic waters, comes up out of the physical waters. That's in reality what the blue lotus flower does. It comes up out of the dirty, muddy water, and it rises above the mud, and when the sun hits it, it opens up. The lotus flower represents the sacred femininity, the sacred feminine. And so the sacred feminine is compassion itself. You see, a lot of people say, oh, what does the sacred feminine really mean? And is it just about women or is it about men and women? The sacred feminine represented compassion and nurturing, the principles of compassion and nurturing and love. So hold on to that thought just for a second. Because the blue lotus flower is indigenous to ancient Egypt and to Egypt. It's a flower that is found originally in ancient Egypt. It was a symbol for Upper Egypt, which is southern Egypt, now known as Sudan and Ethiopia and Somalia. Those areas was ancient Egypt. So in ancient Egypt, the blue lotus flower comes up out of the waters of Nut, the cosmic waters. The lotus flower opens up, and out of the lotus flower comes flies out the phoenix, which represents the soul of the sun god, and also Osiris. So that simple story, what does that represent? The opening of the lotus flower, and myself and my husband Olu were discussing this, so I'm kind of drawing on the discussion we had, but he told me something interesting. He said the lotus flower is like the womb. And the stem of the lotus flower is like the umbilical cord. So it's like the umbilical cord of the mother. And the flower is symbolic when you decode it, like the womb of the mother, our cosmic mother. So the opening of the lotus flower, what does that represent? The opening of the lotus flower represents the birth of divine consciousness. That's what the waters are doing for us today. That's what our mother is doing for us. So the symbol tells you what the mother does for us as a pathway of purification and elevation of our humanity. She births divine consciousness, because when the lotus flower opens up, out comes the phoenix, which represents the rebirth of humanity. The phoenix represents the soul of Osiris, who was divine man in who was divine human. Osiris was divine human. Okay, hold on to the lotus flower. Let's flow over to India. So in India, who holds the lotus flower? Durga is the next goddess who holds the blue lotus flower. Durga the goddess is actually the same goddess as Sekhmet in Egypt. When I decoded the two goddesses, they have actually the exact same stories, exact same stories. And I repeated that deliberately. They have the same stories, the same children, and the same husband, because all the symbols are exact matches. And she holds the blue lotus flower, which is not indigenous to India, it's indigenous to Upper Egypt. Durga, who is the first mother goddess in the Shakti, is the one who defeated the demons on earth. And when she defeated the demons, she turned into Parvati. Parvati is the gentler side of Durga. So let's look at it. Durga holds the blue lotus flower half closed. The symbol of that is that Durga is the side of the mother that makes us have to face our fears and our negativities that hold us back from a higher consciousness and a higher humanity. Thus why the blue lotus flower is closed. Let's check this out. When she turns into Parvati, Parvati's symbol is the blue lotus flower fully opened. So when we have gone through our fears, when we have worked through our shadow energies, then we become enlightened man, woman. And that's why Parvati, after Durga has defeated the demons, her lotus, blue lotus flower is fully opened. And let's now flow our way over, right over to Tibet. In Tibet, the other goddess who holds the blue lotus flower, remember, it's from Upper Egypt, Durga has it, Parvati has it, now right into Tibet, Tara has the blue lotus flower fully opened. Tara is the same goddess as Durga. If you read your history, you will see that they say that Tara is fashioned from Durga. Tara has a fierce side and a gentle side as well. But she, as now, this, what she teaches us as another aspect of the goddess who is all the same, she teaches us compassion. So we already said the blue lotus flower represents the compassion of the mother. The Buddha sits on a blue lotus flower. So we can see in that symbol as well that there you see divine man, woman, birthed. So you can. I'm just going to stay with this one symbol right now, because what I want you to understand is that the mother goddesses essentially are showing us the pathway to birthing a divine man, woman on earth again. It's called the second rebirth. In India, there's a ceremony which is related to Kali, where it comes from the original ceremonies where a king, I'll tell you the modern day ceremony to that, where a person is put into a hut which represents the womb of the mother, and their clothes represent the placenta, and they stay in the hut. And they go through different ceremonies, and when they come out of the darkness, they are said to be rebirthed. It's said to be a second birth. So that's what we are going through. We're either going to not survive this stage of humanity, or we are going to survive. But the surviving means that we have to find a way in all our traditions to really understand, bring the universal principles of our traditions together, and we need to get back to compassion. And to get back to compassion, our mother water goddess, she shows us the pathway we have to take. To get to compassion, we have to travel through the dirt of our fears. We have to conquer our fears and our negativities and our lack of humanity that we are displaying right now, the lack of treating things sacred. We have to travel through that. And then as we travel through that, the lotus will begin to open more and more as our consciousness is taken to a higher level. And then we can get back to a heart-centered way of living. And this is where the term Dharma comes in. The original term was Ma'at. Ma'at meant divine truth and balance. This is in ancient Egypt. The same term Ma'at is still in India. Think of the name Ma'at Magandhi. In the Indian tradition, the Hindu tradition, they say that the Holy One, the greatest universal form, gave birth to Ma'at. That was the second birth from the energetic consciousness, gave birth to Ma'at. It's the same word, and it means the same thing in India. It means divine truth, balance, and compassion. And from Ma'at came all of life. Ma'at is the goddess of truth. So this is what the Mother Goddess means for us today. When you decode her, she is essentially showing us the pathway to our personal elevation, and not just elevation for the sake of it, actually our personal and universal collective salvation. Ashe Mama, Aho Namaste. I think I'll pause it there. Anne?
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Really grateful for that flow that you just offered and the weaving that you offered, the way that the mother weaves these teachings and the way that you've traveled around the world and woven them together. And as you're talking, I'm thinking about the serpentine nature of the rivers herself and of the waters on a molecular level and on an aerial view level, that the mother water has that serpentine aspect. And when you were talking about braiding of the hair and the DNA and the waking up of the DNA, how it's all intertwined with the wisdom of the water, as well as the fire and the earth and the air, that all of the elements have that serpentine nature inherently. And that the rising of the phoenix, that fire, rainbow, dragon aspect, which is also like Quetzalcoatl, who heralds the new day, who heralds the dawn. And it's through the combination of the water and the fire where the rainbow is birthed, where the multiplicity is birthed. So I'm really, thank you so much. I'm inspired by what you're talking about, the birth from the lotus through the waters and of the phoenix rising, and how the waters, the purification that the water offers, is something that we can do on a daily basis. The prayers that we can make, we clean our minds and we clean our hearts every day. Every day we have an opportunity. One of the things that my husband and I do every morning, as we face east, we take a glass of water and we pour it on the earth and we give thanks. And we've done it since our boy, who's now in college, was just an infant. It was shared to us by a Pueblo elder. And we do that every single morning and face east. And we also walk to the lake near our house and we sing to the water and then we sing to the sun. And that daily purification, the way the Mother Waters can offer that to us in such a simple and such a profound way for that ultimate awakening, but also the daily exercise of offering our limitations and offering our petty grievances and offering our resistance to the simple act of giving thanks to the Mother and Waters and asking that she help purify us. Thank you. Thank you so much, Omile. What I'd like to do is open it up. Is there one of our presenters who may want to talk and share and add to what you've got, Olu or Cynthi? Bob, Nicoletta? I'd like to open it up first to our presenters, and then I'd like to open it up to the folks who are on the call.
Hey, this is Olu. I'm Nick Nikun, and Omi, that was awesome. And I would just like to share that, you know, just looking at water, this clear, tasteless, quenching, hydrating substance, elixir. In this world we live in, it is quintessential to our survival that we remember that water is sacred. It's so sacred that the pollution that Omileye was speaking about can change our very DNA. We will digress if we have to drink polluted water. So it's part of our experience that we have to treat it and consider it sacred. And when something is sacred, you won't let it perish. You won't be okay with it looking tattered or watching it disappear or become polluted or distressed or dying right before your eyes. Our future depends on us having that sacred relationship, loving and compassionate to water itself. For that compassion and love is like loving our own selves in each other. Ashe.
Thank you.
Ashe.
Thank you, Olu. Thank you. Bob, did you want to share something?
Sure. My life has been enriched by being at the moment when my children are born and the water comes forth. Whenever I take a drink, that memory is in there. It's instructing me in a way that there are no words for that. If someone I meet, let's say it's in a place where their water is scarce and the person is walking along a path, and I have a container with water, all I need to do is offer it. There's no words to go with it. And then the person drinks it. And in the moment that we share, in that present moment, there's nothing more that needs to be mentioned. I have within me enough dream and enough memory and enough anticipation of what is yet to come that in that present moment I can let go of all that is not in that moment and just taste the water. It gives me the teaching. It shows me I have a relationship which is in my life, it takes precedence over many, many other things. And once I have a thought, and if I express it with a word or not, or a song, the water that I'm made up of, I'm about 80% water, it already gets what is going on. It doesn't need an explanation or a footnote. And the same with that encounter in the place where someone who is thirsty reaches out and takes a drink with me, and I take it with them. That's all that needs to happen. The rest of it is a way we have of expressing that relationship, which can connect with every other present moment that is part of our life. And we can share that with our children, with our with our companions on the path, in the path of life, and all of these expressions of the different beings, the sacred beings, which are personifications of the water herself, the water himself. All of those give us those teachings which then we sometimes we have to share with one another. We have to let each other know the sacred stories and the different appellations of all the different beings that are included in this moment when we can reduce it down to just taking a drink consciously with gratefulness and enjoying it with as just a human, very humble, any child, any old person, anybody, when we take a drink of water, it just gives us the teaching, and then that teaching then gets expanded into a way where we can share it with one another. We have our rites, we have our ceremonies, we have our songs, we have our dances, all of those things, but it goes back to that that wordless sharing with one another of something that we already know a whole lot about it, and at the same time we have to understand that we're ready to learn more, we're ready to share more, we're ready to give each other support in maintaining a relationship which goes through our consciousness and expresses our true being. And the water, to me, the water helps me do that. And that's about all I can say right now. Thank you.
Right, thank you. Nicoletta and Cynthia, you're on the line still. Would you like to offer something to this conversation?
I would like to say, like, I was just watching the picture I took in Greece when I was there two or three weeks ago, and I was listening to this wonderful, deep, intense message Omile was just sharing with us, and the pollution is the one thing. What I just witnessed in Greece also was that when the water is not in its original riverbed anymore, because it was a street was built there, or some houses were built there, or something else. Water always finds its way, even if it's a new way. It always finds its way. So this is also a reflection of our times right now. So whatever the water is showing us, is happening the same thing inside of us. Water always finds its way. And that's what it also makes sacred. That's also a message in it. Thank you.
Thank you. Cynthia, did you want to, if you wanted to speak, you can press 1 and we can see that. There we go. You're open. Yeah, the mic's open for you, Cynthia.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we sure can.
Oh, good. I was delighted by all the goddesses and the wonderful history of Egypt and going to India and then to Tibet. And I was remembering a time I spent with a Shoshone elder, Corbin Harney, in a place called Cahaba. And in Tacopa, California. And Cahaba, the name means Dr. Water. And Cahaba is a hot spring there where the Shoshone people would go for healing. And I thought of that aspect that very simple way of honoring water, just as it is, and the way that has continued for generations of those people that are near this hot spring, the Puhaba, the doctor water. Water as a doctor, just the water as it comes out of the ground, it's heated water. And Corbin Harney also told me he was raised by his grandmother. And his grandmother, before she washed the clothes, she would take a dipper of the water and pour it on the ground and give thanks for the water that would be washing her clothes. Just this simple, very simple traditions, where there's not much story, but the direct thanks and use of the water is so simple and so pure as the water is. Just wanted to share that with you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. I wanted to open it up to our circle of people that are joined on this call. Before I do that, I wanted to offer a song that's very simple that came through me, and it's in honor of Mama Oshun, the goddess of the fresh waters. And it's something that we can sing, and it can help us to call on the purification of the Mother Waters. Mama me Oshun, Mama me, purify my heart, show the way. Mama me Oshun, Mama me, purify my mind. Show the way, Mama May Oshu, Mama May, purify my heart. Show the way, Mama May Oshu. Oshun, Mama May, purify my mind, show the way.
Hmm.
I wanted to open, I wanted to offer that. It's a very simple song that we can use to open ourselves to the blessed sacred intelligence of the Mother Water, the way that our elders spoke to us with the Mother Water and the fire and the earth and the wind. They are so much more intelligent than any human or any combination of humans. And just with that approach, we can open ourselves up to some of the miraculous healing. And like Omile said, that the water's healing us, so then in turn we might offer ourselves in devoted service to help purify the waters. So thank you all of you presenters who are on the call, and thank you to the Water Songline Council, to this wonderful lotus that is opening before us and within us. And thank you to all the participants on the call. Thank you so much for your presence. I wanted to open it up if someone had some questions or some things to share. If you are interested in raising your hand, you can press 1 on your keypad, and we will see that you want to share. We'll open up your mic. Okay, we've got a few people. Let's see. Ariana, I see that you've got your hand raised.
Yes.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Anne.
Hi.
Hello, everyone who are on the council. Thank you so much for your passion and your devotion. And I just basically want to give thanks because the one thing that was said, many things I'm giving thanks for, but one thing went deep into my heart, and that is that we may find ourselves not being able to just do one practice. And that's been true for me for a while. And understanding that there were all these ways in me that needed to come together, and for me the symbol has been the rainbow, and that's been kind of a guiding light in that way. And so I really appreciated how that was stated in the call, and I also am very grateful for the story that linked all the different goddesses from the different areas of the world and the traditions. And that was just beautiful, and I'm so grateful for that. And then I have one request, and that is, would you, before we get off the call, explain the thing about why giving birth to the male child was important, and how you understand that? That is really something that I need to hear.
Thank you. Thank you, Ariana. Thank you so much. Omile, would you like to share about the male child? And then I would like to offer a little bit more about Ushabari and the rainbow. Like,
yeah.
Could you share about that?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that beautiful song, Anne, and all the sharings. The male child. So Oshun. So let's start with Oshun. Oshun did give birth to a male child, and the world was saved. So the male child, his name was Eshu Adara. Eshu Adara is the god who, in the Yoruba West African tradition, is the god who opens the way. Eshu Adara. So the same god, the exact same god exists in the Hindu tradition as Ganesh. So Ganesh also means the god who opens the way. So it wasn't so much about the male. Okay, so I want to explain. It wasn't so much about the maleness, the sex of the child, as to what that child represented. Eshu Adar, if you understand him, he always challenges when there's lies around. He always challenges when there's untruths around, just as Ganesh. He can block the way, or he can open the way. So Eshu Adara represented the birth of a new way. So the fact that Oshun gave birth to him meant that man succeeded, or humans succeeded, in birthing a new way that would open the way. But in his birth also symbolized the fact that mankind had to follow the truth, the path of truth, honoring the sacred. If not, Eshu Adara will close the way. So in essence, Eshu Adara he's also the crossroad. He represents the crossroad, just like Ganesh represents the crossroad. So when he's given birth to, he represents the crossroad we stand at, but the fact he was given birth to represented that through compassion and well, if you notice, the beings of light had to apologize to Oshun, and they had to humble themselves and treat her like the sacred mother she was. So he represents the fact that through apology to our Mother Earth, the Holy Ones, of the waters and everything, and through humbling ourselves, as Anne said, to realizing the energies are even more intelligent than us, and by opening our hearts to receiving their great wisdom, then a new way is birthed. That's what Eshuadara represented, the birth of a child. But if we flow those waters back to Egypt again, and back to the lotus flower, that Horus, the child who was the son of Isis and Osiris, Isis and Osiris gave birth to Horus. And Horus represented divine man on earth, and he was the one who fought against his uncle Set, who brought chaos into the world. And so he was losing the battle, and when he began to, and he lost an eye, and when he began to start winning the battle is when the god Tehuti, the god of wisdom, gave him a new eye, the third eye of wisdom. So the original story of the child, the male child being born, just like Jesus was the male child as well, the original story once again goes back to the waters of the Nile. And so, that's why you have to start linking the stories and the symbols back together again, so you can see the whole picture. So the birth of the child, if you look at Horus, represented that, and saw that he had to get the eye of wisdom, which is where we're at. We have to begin to see with more wisdom again. So this is what the birth of the male child represents, the birth of seeing with wisdom again. And the birth of the child represents the birth of divine human being. So you see that child was birthed from the mother. And it's interesting, going back to the lotus, Horus the god, if you look at his pictures of antiquity, he actually is birthed out of a lotus. When he's born, you see him sitting in a lotus. He's coming out of a lotus. That's how he's born. So it shows that he is the birth of a new consciousness. He is birthed from he represents compassion and love of the Mother Universe that we embrace. And that's what saves our world. Going back, flowing back to the West African story, you see she said, if I give birth to the boy child, the world will be saved. So that's what it symbolically means in a nutshell. I hope that wasn't too complicated the way I explained it.
Thank you, Omire. I'd like to loop into that and add to that by honoring my Orisha, my mother, Oshumare. When you spoke about the rainbow, Ariana, and you're talking about the male child being born from the mother, Oshumare is a goddess, an aspect of the mother waters. She's the waterfall, and she was born from the love, and she also sometimes is a he, so she's paradoxical. She's he and she's she. And she was born from the love of the water and the sun. And when she manifests as a rainbow serpent. So when the sun hits the water flowing down in the waterfall, and that love between the water and the sun and the water and the fire creates that serpentine rainbow serpent. So the rainbow, the multiplicity that comes from the mother giving birth to the sun, from the union of the opposites, from the fire and the water coming together, so many original stories, the earth, the land was just water, the creation was just water, and then the star woman or star came down, and through that hiss of the star hitting the ocean, the dark, dark oceans, and then the beings from the waters going down and getting the mud and bringing it up. That's the creation of the four elements, is that water and the fire coming together, the star nation and the oceans coming together, the union of the opposites, the masculine and feminine. It's only through that union of the opposites, only through that rub of the impossibility of the contraries, and only through that hiss of creation, can the multiplicity of the rainbow, can the rainbow serpent, can the phoenix rising, can the Quetzalcoatl rainbow dawn being be birthed. And that's part of the lessons, part of the teachings of this Mother Water, Mother Father Water, really, so many stories of how the contraries then birth the multiplicity. So I just wanted to add that to the mix of this conversation that has so many branches, so many different ways of manifesting.
And can I just add to that, in adding on to that part, in answer to the original question, you just made me realize something about the birth of the son, the child, the boy child. So if we go back to the original story, Horus is a sun god, you know. And so
right.
what you just made me realize, even though I said it, but you made me realize it in a more, even more simple way, that this boy child, the sun, represented literally the sun,
right.
You know, which symbolized consciousness, you know, the illumination of consciousness. And that's what the birth of the boy child meant, you know, when you go back to what the symbols meant. And what you said about the rainbow serpent with the sun and with the fire and the water. So if we take it back to the core of the conversation, the pathway of purification of the mother consciousness. So what happens as we purify ourselves and we give apology and we begin to breathe into our hearts and breathe compassion, we have this awakening of our DNA. But what happens as we breathe, meditation is a key portal in every tradition. The West African, Native Americans, we all have different ways of meditating, you know, contemplating basically. What happens is that the DNA awakens and the waters begin to purify themselves within our bodies. And when we breathe, something happens where the channels, we have three channels in our body. We have what they call the Ida and the Pingala and the Sushumna. So I think the Ida is on the left, if I remember right. The Pingala is on the right, and the Sushumna is the middle channel. And what happens is as we breathe and we purify, so we go through that Durga stage, that Sekhmet, whatever the mothers called in the different traditions of that fierce stage, is the stage of fire, purification. And as we begin to purify, those channels begin to unite. And that's a scientific fact. They begin to unite. And the energy begins to rise. And that's why people talk about the chakras. We basically get lit up. Our bodies get lit up. So the chakras are each different colors. And so this energy begins to rise and rise and rise and rise. And comes out of our brow and the crown chakra as the waters in our body begin to purify through our consciousness becoming more compassionate. And thus the rainbow serpent rising through our bodies up into our brow and into the crown. So what basically is happening through meditation and working with the waters, like Bob said, water has all the memory. And it's about just that humble taking of the water, sharing of the water. What happens is that the DNA has its physical layer, but it has a much deeper consciousness to it. And that's what begins to rise. And that's why you have the different colors of the chakras, and that's why they call it the rainbow serpent. So the water, so when we pray by water, what's happening, the Tibetans say, there's a saying in Tibet where it says water and water creates double elixir, creates the elixir of life. So when we pray by water, what I believe is happening, as we drink the water, as we pray to the water, that water activates our consciousness. And you have the rising and the awakening happening, and thus going back to the lotus flower, why when the lotus begins to rise through the dirt and rises up, it has the opening and the rising up of the Bennu bird, which is the reawakening of consciousness. And that's why when you talk about when you start really decoding the symbols of all the ancient cultures, what you get are not just children's stories. What you get is a very deep science, and that's why sometimes we find it hard to grasp, because they were talking about a science of consciousness, and all the traditions still have it within them. Just sometimes it's misinterpreted. So that's what I wanted to add on a little short note,
right.
If that was short.
Thank you, Omi. We have about 10 more minutes before we will break out into smaller groups where the participants can contribute or speak with one another and get to know one another. And I wanted to open it up to the participants, but before that, Bob wanted to say something.
Hi. I just am listening very gratefully to all the beautiful insights and teachings that come from this bringing water to our attention. What we pay attention to, that becomes the reality that teaches us. And I just want to say, for the times in which I live, I am struck by a field of skepticism and doubt, which comes from an experience of separation. And it's very helpful to know that these teachings about water make it possible for me to feel that I'm in a friendly field of endeavor called the cosmos. It's a friend, and a friend is a loving being. And to talk about these mothers gives me a feeling of gratefulness, because the mother is the source of our life, and the mother is also recognized as someone who is able to take care of our thirst, to take care of our need, and to continue on in life, so that we never forget that we come from a source which is, yes, to me, a human being, but also it is a special human being that is revered as my mother. And I learned recently that it's important to remember that in being raised by human beings, yes, there's an aspect of it which is imperfect, and that is the teaching of who we are not. But also the perfection of it is that the human beings that truly love us also do the best they can to show us who we are. So we then are given the choice to remember ourselves and to remember the source, and to remember also that we are in a friendly cosmos, and it is a loving cosmos that birthed us onto the path we're on, and birthed us in the way in which we can then walk and meet a being of light, a being of a great intelligence and kindness, and will initiate us to the next step on the path that we're to make. That's all I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shay.
Well, we have a few minutes where if someone, one of our participants, would like to offer to this conversation. We've been fortunate to have 6 of our Water Songline members here on this call, so there's been a lot of weaving with us. But if someone who's on the call wants to raise their hand and add to this weaving. We really want to encourage it and also want to remind everybody about the Facebook page and the ongoing development and growth and blossoming of this community, all of us being lovers and devotees of the water. So if someone wants to raise their hand, this is a good time to do that. You can press 1 on your keypad. Okay, Deborah.
Deep blessings.
Oh, we got 3 hands up, so we'll just continue on with those 3, and then we'll move into breakout sessions. But Deborah, I'll call on you first. Hi.
Hi, Ann. Hi. Just deep, deep gratitude and blessings to everyone who's been sharing this wisdom and beauty. And the word that keeps coming to me in the vision is embodiment. And this birthing of the sun and the moon, the male, the female, the light, the dark, and that rainbow serpent emergence, and listening to Bob talk about walking in the next step. And I just get this very deep sense that as we bring these deep, deep ancient ways back into this present time and into the ancient future, that is what's happening, is that it's actually manifesting within our, as Ami was saying, DNA, and it's this embodiment that's happening. And I just get this picture of literally walking on the water, with the sun, diamonds shining on us, and that sense of being a family in that womb of the waters around our Mother Earth and within us, and this deep place of unity, a feeling of coming full circle again into the ancient future, and deeply embodying in every word, in every action, in every interaction, this way of standing in this truth that you're all sharing in all the ways that you're sharing it tonight. And again, I'm just deeply grateful, and I feel it going out into the waters and all the waterways.
Oh, thank you, Deborah. Thank you. One thread that I wanted to pick up just briefly from what you said, Deborah, is Elena on the Facebook page suggested that we write down, and that we write all these different waterways that are near our house that we're praying for, so we can just weave them all together. So on the Facebook page, if we want to do that, then we can create this wave of prayers for the different waterways. Like you were saying, Omi, it's all one tree. Mm-hmm. I see that, Katie, you have your hand up. Hi, would you like to talk?
Yes, I would.
Hi, we can hear you.
Okay, great. I'm really looking for some guidance. In my workplace, there's a great disrespect for water, and I'm really looking for some guidance on how to really respond to that.
Yeah, ask the question a little bit more specifically, so we might offer.
Well, it's really much seen as a commodity, and I work with mostly men in my department, and I am, I kind of represent I really struggle when it's spoken with such disrespect, and so I'm looking for guidance on kind of how to respond in a way that is helpful. Or the best way to kind of respond.
I thank you, Katie. I'm wondering if Olu or Bob, if you have something to say to Katie around that. Yeah, our men who are here on this call.
Yeah, sure, Katie. Hi. It's good to hear your voice. Response has to start in your heart. And it has to start in a place which is like the water, where there's no judgment. Water doesn't judge us. Even if it's polluted, it shows us the truth of what's going on, you know. And there's no, you can't step over that. It's just the way it is. But to realize that we all come from a place where, yeah, we dream that there will be something more appropriate and more more respectful that can be done. And yet when we encounter in ourselves or others a kind of response which is disrespectful, we then have the opportunity to choose. Are we going to respect ourselves and love ourselves and forgive whatever has emerged out of our heart, and we're going to look at it and go, well, sure, you have the right to feel the way you feel. Yeah, good. And then are we going to then expand that and respond to others as well? Maybe it's possible to start with a kind of an insight, which is kind of like a prayer, to ask that everything will turn out good and that the disharmony and the imbalance that we experience can somehow develop so that in time the way we feel is in harmony with the way we want it to be. It's always important to start with an assessment of our own feelings and how we are, and then be ready to forgive ourselves and love ourselves. That is the way to then communicate, because then other people, they can feel it, they can sense it, that you're not coming from a place of judgment, you're coming from a place of forgiveness and acceptance. Anyway, that's just my own slant on it. It isn't meant to criticize you, it's just meant to possibly give you a handle on how to respond, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I would like to add, please.
Thank you, Alu. Yes, please.
Yes, you know, I was told early in our journey together, Omi and I saw Amma, the hugging saint, and she was able to give us an advice, which was, for me, be the change you wish to see. Because you can't change the world if you can't change yourself. And that's a reachable goal. So, you know, you always start from what are you doing and how are you treating the water? And in that space, you know, every day we cross over the river on a bridge or what have you, and we look over and we acknowledge and we thank the water and we pray for the water and we show gratitude and love. That actually makes a difference in our lives and everybody's lives who that water touches. So be the change you wish to see. Pray to the waters. Change is occurring as we speak. And don't worry, it is going to change. So you just want you want to put yourself in a very powerful and peaceful, loving, compassionate space. No matter what, they will come around. Ashe.
Thank you. Thank you, Olu. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Katie. We have another hand up. Gary Fox, would you like to? Your mic is open, and you can share with us. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we can.
First of all, I want to thank everyone for allowing me to be part of this circle of fabulous people and like-minded consciousness, and I've been waiting a long time to find a tribe that is interested in this work. So I'm very happy to be part of this. And I'm a Pisces. I'm a water baby. I've been collecting mermaids since 80s, and I've always felt like, you know, the water is, I'm from the water, I'm of the water, and I've always felt a little off from normal humans, or, you know, not just a little different. I took a trip to Hawaii and went snorkeling for the first time about 4 years ago. And when I got done snorkeling, I just felt transformed. I started meditating shortly after that experience, and all I kept seeing, Omile, when you were sharing your story about the blue lotus flower, my first experiences with meditation, all I kept seeing was lotus flowers, lotus flowers, lotus flowers. And I was going through a lot of a process of forgiveness, and my heart just kept opening up like a lotus flower. So that was beautiful. The stories you were relating about the lotus flower were very meaningful to me.
Ashe.
I just wanted to remind everyone that today is a very auspicious day, being 11. And so I think it's wonderful that we're saying these prayers on this day and meeting together on this day. And I'm just very happy to be here and very grateful to be here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate everybody who's on the call and the lots of people who are going to be listening to the recordings in the future. We will be in their past, as I said last week. There are almost 200 people who signed up for these sessions, and I encourage everybody to just spread the word. As we know, we're just weaving this web and weaving this community of like-minded hearts and minds. We have 5 more sessions every Tuesday, and we have a Facebook page associated with these Water Song Line teleseminars specifically, these 7 weeks. And we'll have the recordings, like I said, available. So for those of you who want to stay on for the next until about 8 o'clock Pacific time, about 25 minutes, we want to stay on and communicate with one another, please do. And what I would like to suggest, we'll break you up into small groups of maybe 4 to 6 people. And once you're in your small groups, I want to encourage you to introduce yourselves to one another. And then those of us who are presenters will be visiting your different groups. We had a little bit of technological glitches last time, and we'll do our best to make it run smoothly so you can connect with one another like that. So if you want to stay on the line, please do, and our beautiful Margine will organize you into small groups where you can deepen with each other and introduce yourselves and then just flow with your conversation. Okay? Thank you, each and every one of you and those who are going to be listening in the future for this beautiful water wellspring of love and compassion and kindness and devotion. Thank you so much.
Ashe.
Ashe.